for this next segment here, I just want to say that sometimes we get some things that are out of the blue from our New York bureau, and some things that basically we would have never expected to be able to have happen for this show, and these things have happened largely through the efforts of Steve, who's been out there working at the circuit out there in New York, trying to expand our list of connections. Our interview with Bob Barker last week would be one such example of that. And this one here is yet another. It is a tremendous pleasure to have this man on the show. As I said, something that we could have never expected to have happen for the show. And miraculously, it has. We've been able to get this guy on. The gentleman probably more associated with Mad Magazine, I would have to say, than just about anybody else. So what better time to have him on the occasion of the 500th edition of Mad on the newsstands here. I could only be speaking of the one and only Al Jaffe. Al, welcome to the FDH Lounge tonight, sir. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
I'd like to start by asking you your thoughts as somebody who was around at the very beginning with Mad Magazine for a while, and then continuously again after 1964, the mind couldn't possibly have thought, you know, that it would still be going in 2009. You'd still be doing this here with them. I just, to the extent that you were thinking down the road with it, what were your thoughts and expectations? What kind of shelf life did you think it would have at the time?
You mean the thing that I do for Mad, fold-in?
The fold-in and the magazine itself, really, any aspect of it, your association with it, the magazine itself. Is this something you really could have foreseen going on as long as this? Has it come as a surprise to you?
Well, it did come as a surprise. As a matter of fact, Mad Magazine is part of Time Warner, and Time Magazine ran a story about Mad when it was about 2 years old, and referred to it as a short-lived fad. So, even the smart guys couldn't figure out how it could last so long. And they eventually bought it.
Well, that's probably a guy who years earlier referred to television as a fad also here.
But I think you're right about that.
But
yeah, that's true.
You know, you spoke of the fold-in, and that's, of course, the signature there. I mean, you've got some other things as well that you're much known for, whether it be Tall Tales, Snappy Answers to Stupid Questions, which I think have caused, you know, a lot of humor for people over the years here. But the fold-in itself, as both a piece of humor and also a piece of art as far as what it takes to do this, the renderings that it takes to bring about this type of image in every issue. Issue here. I mean, that's the one thing, and you referenced it yourself a second ago here. Clearly, that's the thing that you're best known, and it's remarkable. I mean, I've been viewing some features on you on YouTube to get ready for this, that again, you're still doing this. It's a little bit more of a challenge these days, but all this time, and after 45 years of doing it since rejoining Mad in 1964, it's quite remarkable that you've been able to not only just visualize this, but physically execute it all this time.
Well, I do have a twisted mind, but in truth, the fold-in was supposed to be a one-shot thing. I came up with it and showed it to them, and I said, you're not going to buy it because it'll mutilate the magazine. So Bill Gaines, who was the publisher, said, oh, that's okay. When the kid folds the back cover and it mutilates the magazine, and he wants to keep a nice, fresh magazine, he'll go out and buy another one. So he thought it was pretty good idea. But when he said, can you come up with another idea? I said, look, I had this one idea. It was a gag. He says, try it. Go ahead. And they kept doing that to me. And I've been doing it for, I think I've done about 410 of them. And but by now, it's become second nature. You know, I just, I get the idea, and somehow the solution pops out of the air.
In the course of doing this over a period of time, I mean, you've seen society change in probably just countless ways from when you first started doing this, and you know, this fold in the early to mid '60s. What have been some of the richer veins of humor or material to work with over the years? I mean, probably, you know, the Nixon era probably had its fair share of things for you here, but you know, what have been some of the things that have stood out in your mind where you've said, man, that's something that really gives me a lot of good material to work with?
Oh, I think it really runs the gamut, because I think the fold in itself has touched on almost everything, as most of the stuff in Mad. I mean, you know, we get when something in politics goes over the top, we try to get a laugh out of it. Mad is not a crusading magazine. Mad's focus is really to have fun and to have something that the reader can enjoy. You know, they let the New York Times do the serious stuff. But everything's fair game. I mean, I've done fold-ins about celebrities. One of my favorites was about Elvis Presley, who, you know, turned into a butterfly after you folded it, because you know, he had all these fancy costumes, and so we made a gag out of that. I think we've done everything. We've even done war stuff, but not in a heavy-handed way. I mean, nothing, you know, exploiting the misery and the stuff that is just not fun to deal with. We're supposed to make people laugh.
Well, and you know, obviously it's done a tremendous job of that over the years, the way that it's been received by people. And I'm just struck here, Al, in looking at your career, that the way that things have turned out, you've been fortunate enough to have the fold-in as a signature feature with you, as well as many other things that you've done that you're also known for in other ways as well. We talked about, you know, snappy answers to stupid questions, some of the work that you did with Timely earlier on, some of the different features involved with that. Do you have anything that's even a close second as far as favorites that you have, or best work that you think that you would be known for as well?
Well, I've always regarded myself as a journeyman artist writer, and whatever came along, any opportunity where I could have some fun and deliver the goods, basically I was working for people. I was working for very good editors. Stanley was a good editor at Timely Comics, and I enjoyed working with him. And then, of course, there was Harvey Kurtzman and Al Feldstein, and now currently there's John Ficarra. When you work with smart people, you get a chance to try all kinds of things, and I'm happy to say that I did avail myself of that opportunity by building things that were, instead of my drawing them, I built them and somebody photographed them. That was an idea. If kids designed their own toys, well, I built a bunch of rickety toys that a kid might build, and we photographed it from every angle, and it turned out to be very, very successful. People reacted nicely to it. But as I said, I guess within the industry, within the art and cartooning and illustration industry and the writing of humor, I'm a journeyman. I do what's assigned to me. Or if I come up with an original idea like the fold-in, I propose it. And if they like it, they buy it. If they don't, I go ahead and do something else.
Well, having said that, within that industry, even though you use the term journeyman, Al, there's a tremendous amount of respect that's been bestowed upon you. There's that quote from Charles Schulz where he says, quote, "Al can cartoon anything," end quote. You, of course, won the Reuben Awards Cartoonist of the Year in 2008. When these things happen to you, when you receive recognition of that kind, I mean, obviously that has to give you a very warm and rewarding feeling whenever anything of that nature happens.
Well, you're absolutely right, and especially when it comes from people that I respect enormously, like Sparky Schultz. And I've met all the, not all, of course, but I've met so many of the greats of my childhood, like Rube Goldberg and Otto Soglo and Alex Raymond, who did Flash, originated Flash Gordon, and Hal Foster, who did Prince Valiant. And when I was young, I met these guys, and, you know, they inspired me because I loved their work. And I think, you know, I was blessed and fortunate enough to be able to make my own way and to have some people admire my work. So what else can you say?
Well, I wonder, in looking at your work, Al, if this is something where I'd really love to know your thoughts on this, on whether this is something that, if you think that work of the nature that you're doing is likely to be replicated in future times here, because you've been so you know, consistent on doing the work by freehand and reproducing it in that manner now. And, you know, we're living in a Photoshop world right now. There's so much work that's being done, whether it be commercial artwork or whatever, on the computer. That's a tool that a lot of people are using. Some might say, in many cases, a crutch. Do you foresee basically art, as you've been doing it and pursuing it over the years, do you foresee it managing to manage on into the future, or do you think that it might become something of a lost art as people grow increasingly dependent on the computer?
Well, I think of all the technological advances that are made. You know, you need an artist to use these things. Even the guy that was working in a cave somewhere and chipping out a picture of a deer or something, he still had to find a rock and a sharp instrument with which to do that. You know, a paintbrush is a tool. You know, the computer paint shop, that's a tool too. But the only successful people doing that with these technological advances in equipment are going to be people who are really artists in their, you know, in their minds. You have to be an artist first. You can't just sit around with a computer and punch keys and a miraculous picture is going to come out. You have to have artistic talent of some sort, and the best stuff will rise to the top, and the stuff that's not so good will fall away. It's the same in our business.
Well, that's a good point. I guess they're just manifesting it, you know, in different ways with different tools.
Right.
As far as Mad Magazine itself goes, and again, there have been some ups and downs as far as the commercial success of it over time here. The critical success, I think everybody has always thought, has been strong. It's always had its challenges in the marketplace trying to carve out enough, you know, to be able to stick around, which shows you that 500 is quite an accomplishment. I mean, for any magazine to be able to do this. But you guys have had some competitors over time here. I mean, Cracked is the first one, I think, that comes to mind among a lot of people. But
yes,
you guys have had the staying power here. I mean, how did you ever look at any of the magazines that were trying to do the same thing here in this business? Was there a sense of competition between them, friendly thing between peers? How was that sort of between organizations?
As far as I'm concerned, the more the merrier. I like to see artists and writers have work. And, you know, Mad Magazine could use just so many talented people, and it tended to be very loyal and faithful to the people who stuck with it. I'm an example of that, over 50 years with the same magazine, and I'm not on salary, you know, I'm just as good as my last job. No one at Mad through the years has had a salary except the editors and the people working in the production department. But the writers and the artists are all freelance, and you know, that's how you make a living. And the more work you have, the better living you make. And people who couldn't get into Mad, if they could start another magazine or get into Cracked or Sick or Crazy, more power to them. I never felt competitive with them. I respected them as my colleagues.
Well, that's a very good, healthy attitude to have, and there was some good work being done there certainly as well. I mean, I got a lot of laughs out of those magazines as well as with Matt over the years. But again, you guys have had the staying power. You've made it to 500 here. As you look and see, I mean, you have the ability to look at, you know, the entire scope of the history of MAD, to, you know, and much of it from the vast majority of it from the inside, to be able to make a determination. How do things look going forward here? 500 is always a significant marker for whatever type of organization here. Would this represent one of the higher points in the history of MAD? Do things seem like they're going stronger commercially at this point in time?
Well, I think MAD is having the same problems that all print media is having. There's a lot of competition from the the internet and cyberspace and so on. People are switching from one thing to another. MAD is having a bit of a problem right now in also trying to use the internet in some way. But I'm not part of the business end of MAD. I'm just part of the talent part, and I'm a contributor. I don't have any idea of what their financial situation is. But I do think they are facing problems with advertising, just as every other magazine and newspaper is, and who knows what the future will bring. I think you have to make adjustments.
Well, there you're right that there's a strong move in terms of trying to work the internet into the business model. I'm seeing a bunch of features. There's some very good, funny features that are exclusive to the online part of MAD, and that is something that everybody's having to do these days in order to keep things out there and keep enough of a presence in front of people. I have yet to come across on the site here any examples of the fold-in on there, but that seems to me something that would probably translate very well. You look at the image, you click a button, and the parts move together there. That would seem to be something that would translate well to online, Al.
It did work very well. The New York Times put 23 of my MAD fold-ins on a story they did about me, and I was just amazed when I went to that site, and you just push a button and the thing folded so neatly. I mean, when you have to fold a magazine, it's a little bit sloppy, but it's very neat on the screen. So we've talked about it, and as a matter of fact, I'm supposed to meet with the editors at some point and figure out how we can carry it over into the internet.
Oh, excellent. That would be tremendous. So we'll certainly be looking forward to that. I think, I'm not surprised that you said that it translated well from what you saw, because I could just imagine that it would. But
it worked beautifully.
Oh,
it really
wow.
did. And it's still on. I'm not that good at computers, but I'm sure you would be able to find it, and it would be very entertaining.
Oh, would be, yeah. This is this is always great whenever we have any guests who kind of, you know, break any news here. We'll have to look for that in the future with Matt. That would be great if we could ever see that on the website.
Probably under the New York Times, though.
Yeah,
did a story on me last year.
Okay.
So it may still be there.
Times Archive. I'll bet you it is. Yeah, I'm going to definitely Google that here later on and see if we can find it. I'll tell you what, we'll link to that on our website if we come across it. But, Al, we always like on this show to give our guests a chance to plug anything. I know that you've had some collections of your work that have been out there in past years. Is there anything in particular that you would like to plug here tonight, sir?
Well, you're very kind. I do have a couple of things which will I'll go through very quickly. The first is Tall Tales, which is a very nice, beautifully produced collection of my syndicated comic feature, Tall Tales. The other thing, of course, is Humbug, which is a collection of the 11 issues of a magazine that the originator of Mad Magazine, Harvey Kurtzman, and the rest of us produced about, I don't know, 50 years ago. But Fantagraphics has made a wonderful two-volume box set out of it, which is just magnificent. And the third plug that I would appreciate being able to tell about is a memoir about my life is being written at the moment, and I will be illustrating it. And it's kind of an interesting story in which I was born in Savannah, Georgia, and traveled and lived in a small village in Europe as a child, and then came back to the United States and got involved in the humor business. So you have quite a parlay there. So some readers might be interested in looking for that next year.
Next year,
next year.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I mean, I'm familiar with the outlines of your life story, but yeah, it would be great to learn about it in more detail. That's really something I'm sure that a lot of people, I think a lot of your fans are really going to be looking forward to learning about that and some of the forces that shaped you through your life. That's a great project, Al.
Well, thank you. I hope they will be looking for it.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. And you know, as things go along, and you know, as you have you know that book coming out, and anything else that you would like to plug, Al, it would be our pleasure to have you back on. It's been wonderful to have you on tonight, sir.
You're very gracious, and I enjoyed talking to you.
Well, thank you very much, Al. I really enjoyed this tremendously myself. It's our honor and pleasure to have you on. The great Al Jaffe, everybody. Al, thank you again tonight.
Thank you.
All right, sir. Al Jaffe from Mad Magazine, and that is just tremendous to get to have him on. A very gracious and humble man for somebody who is a legitimate legend. Episode number 500 of Mad Magazine, issue number 500, I guess would be the term, out on the newsstands right now with the Al Jaffe fold-in as per always.